Hello, welcome to another episode of Legally Different, the hub for the soulfully ambitious. I'm your host, Lauren Kay. Today is a bit of a different episode. It's a solo one, all about decision making. I felt really inspired to record this episode because, firstly, decision making is so key, isn't it? It's a huge part of all of our lives. We make decisions every single day, whether it's as small as, you know, what to wear, what to eat, or bigger things, bigger life decisions, such as in relation to where to live, work, relationships, all the things. And then also, as many of you know, I've been studying human design, the human design system, for quite a while now. And I've began running one-on-one sessions, helping people dive into their own unique human design, which has been amazing. But one thing that really struck me when I first began my studies of human design is how there are so many decision-making tools within us, and we all have our own unique authority. So the key way we are designed to make decisions. And the thing that really struck me is there are 7 authorities in human design, and only one of them is mind-based. It's called mental authority. So where someone is truly aligned to make big decisions based on their mind. And then it's actually quite rare to have mental authority because only projectors, who are 20% of the population, and they're one of the 5 personality archetypes essentially in human design, and I'll do a separate episode on that. Only projectors can have mental authority, and then a small percentage of projectors actually have mental authority. And I was like, that is so wild, because how many of us are in our heads, like all the time anyway, but particularly when it comes to making decisions, we generally don't trust other intelligent systems in our body, such as following our gut, for example, is one. And I think being in our minds can, I'm sure you've experienced as well, but lead to things like analysis paralysis. So you're overthinking and literally cannot make a decision as a result. So you stay stuck or end up going along with someone else's preference or choice, or the opposite, where you become like almost a control freak about everything. You need to be in total control about every decision, everything in your life, every move, almost making too many decisions, if that makes sense, when a decision doesn't need to be made. Yeah, so I think it's a really interesting topic, and it obviously impacts all of us on a day-to-day basis. And I think particularly looking at it through the lens of human design, it provides a really unique but tangible angle. So I'm going to run through maybe just like 5-10 minutes about my own decision-making journey, where I've been, where I am now. And then I'm going to run you through the 7 authorities in human design. You each have your own unique authority, the way you're designed to make decisions. Of course, we have a myriad of intelligent systems in our body, so it's not to say you're not meant to use all of them, but for like key decisions, we all have our own authority. So if you want to look up yours, I'll pop the link in the show notes. You can go and get your own human design chart, either from www.mybodygraph.com or www.myhumandesign.com. And you'll get this chart up. And if it's the first time you've got your human design chart, it will look pretty wild. So kind of ignore that for now and just look on the right-hand side for your authority, and it'll be 1 or 2 words. And I'll unpack later in the episode what they mean. And if you don't want to do that, if you don't want to find out your specific authority at this time, no worries, you'll still get a lot out of this episode for sure. So in terms of my own decision-making journey, turn the clock back 7+ years ago, I was definitely an overthinker and found it really hard to make decisions because I would overthink every option, the sub-options within the options, every potential consequence, and end up finding it really difficult to make decisions. And if I unpack why that is, I mean, I think there's, you know, different elements. It's not just one reason. Maybe it's because, for example, I'm an older sibling and, you know, always wanted to look out for my sister and like be in charge. And I was always the one dealing with certain things and like problem solving. And, you know, I have innate leadership qualities within me, which means taking charge of decisions. But when I really reflected, I do think a key piece of it has also been informed by and conditioned by my legal career. So many of you listening are lawyers. I know not all of you are. And I think actually what I'm about to share will probably relate to other professions and just other life dynamics in general. So when I unpack it, and particularly I'm talking now to the period of time when I worked in like a large commercial law firm, analysing, not being too much in my head here, I recognised that actually when it came to decision making, and this is kind of like a strange, unique angle on it, I was never really making decisions, if that makes sense. So as a lawyer, of course, there are times when it's appropriate to make decisions, but generally, day-to-day work is not really about you and your choice because we're advisors. And fine, that's a key role. Many of us are very gifted at being advisors. It's one of our, you know, one of our gifts. It's our purpose. But what that inherently means as well is we're kind of always looking outside of ourselves, particularly in law. So if you think when you're advising on something, you're looking to what the legal position is on something. You're looking to what the firm's voice is on something or the firm's approach, what your boss thinks about something, what your colleague would think about it, what your colleague would do, what the client wants, of course, that's first and foremost. Like, what's the client's angle on this? What do they want from it? And it's all like external authorities, if that makes sense. Not much of it is like our own internal authority, but there are definitely ways we can exercise that. And I'll come on to that as well. But I'm just talking more maybe like the core elements of advice. And as a consequence as well, there's like a lot of things going on there. Just the nature of law and other similar professions, you've got to think about a lot of things. There's like a lot of balls in the court, which means you have to be constantly on it, thinking, analysing about different components. Fine, not questioning that. That all has its place. It's all necessary. Definitely not questioning any of that. But I think a consequence of that is almost your checking out of yourself and who you are and your authority and your feelings and your thoughts and your inclinations about certain things because you're looking to external authorities. Does that make sense? So I appreciate that's quite a unique lens on it. And again, not questioning those things, but really what I am asking is, okay, so how can we bring more of ourselves to a situation, to work in general? So we're engaging and exercising our own authority muscles. And I think that can be done in lots of different ways. I've had so many interesting conversations this week, actually, giving one-on-one human design sessions to various people around this, how we can, you know, use our own authority, which might not be mental based. It might be things like our gut, our instincts, which I'll come on to in more detail, in our work, in legal work or other professions or just day-to-day life. So for example, some interesting things we came up with were, and these are examples actually that these people, all of them actually partners in their respective law firms, actually do and use in law. So it might be using their intuition when it comes to recruitment. Maybe on paper, someone really fits the bill, but there's that inner knowing of like, yeah, they're the one, or not sure they're a great fit. It can be in like a research task and like following your nose and something's telling you to look at this kind of research platform that maybe you wouldn't usually go to, and you go to it and then you find the answer in 2 seconds, whereas maybe otherwise it would have taken hours. Also, one person I spoke to who is incredibly intuitive, and I actually think she has next level gifts. I mean, we all have the gift of intuition, but this person in particular definitely is very tapped into it. And she even gets downloads about directions to take cases in, yeah, different strategic angles, and maybe explaining it to other people on the outside. You know, it might be hard to explain why or how, but she gave so many examples of where it worked out and led to like amazing results for her clients. So they're just some examples. And in tuning into those, we're also like engaging with ourselves more than we think rather than checking out. Because another like kind of impact, I guess, I realized when I was in this like kind of overthinking, overanalyzing phase was I kind of wanted to check out of my own life. I was so done with thinking and using my mind that when it came to non-work things, I don't know, let's say what I wanted to do after work, it was just that more of that inclination just to chill. I didn't even want to consider the options or tune in with me and what I wanted to do. Does that make sense? So I think the more we can like exercise our own decision-making authority about even the small things in terms of what we're eating or what we're wearing and ensuring it's in alignment with our values and things like that. I think it allows us to not be, not check out of day-to-day life, if that makes sense. So when I left kind of my mainstream traditional legal career and took a career break and went traveling, I've mentioned it a few times and I won't go to town on that period of my life, but just touching on the decision-making element of it, it really invited me to surrender, to relax. I just got in this more of this go with the flow mode and realized I didn't have to be in control of everything. And actually, the more ease I felt, the more relaxed I felt, the more surrender, the less grip I had on things, actually, the more beauty that came into my life, the more serendipitous meetings came into my life, the more opportunities, more aligned opportunities and gifts came along. So that was, I mean, there's so much more I could say on that period of my life and how that showed up, but just in very headline terms, that was a huge period of surrender for me when I realized, oh my God, I don't have to overanalyze and be in control so much. And actually, when it came to decision making, I had more clarity. It was easy to know to go in a particular direction or to choose a particular option around work or where to be because it was so in tune with me. It was like I didn't have to grip onto everything. It didn't feel like there were a million decisions to make. I'd like narrowed it down just by going with the flow and leaning more into what was in alignment with me and like exercising the decision-making muscle in really subtle ways that made the bigger decisions less of a big, scary decision, if that makes sense. So that's like what I would say is the second phase of my decision-making journey. And I've been in that period for many years now, and it's a muscle I continue to exercise. Then I came across human design and really, I came across it a couple of years now, but really lent into it fully, I'd say about a year ago. I found out my decision-making authority, which is called splenic authority, which is all about the intuition. And I'll explain that very shortly. And I've been experimenting with that even more to see how that feels and what that brings into my life. So I feel like, that's like a new period I've just entered into, which is really interesting. Moving on now to decision making, particularly through the lens of human design, I really wanted to share with you the seven different authorities because they just completely changed my perspective on decision making. Some of the like ways, modalities, I definitely was already aware of, had definitely already exercised in my own life. But there's just more to it than you think. And it really, really makes sense. And as I say, having experimented with it in my own life, being in sessions with one-on-one clients and seeing how they're implementing it, it just is a really tangible tool to help us get clarity when it comes to making decisions. So getting into the seven different authorities, the first one is called emotional authority. And as the name suggests, this is all about the emotions and understanding your emotional wave. So people with this authority will generally go through journeys of emotional waves that might be really high and be like, oh, that sounds amazing. And like agree to, I don't know, sign up to a project or go to an event. And then the next day they might be on the low of that emotional wave and be like, oh, why did I sign up to that? It's the last thing I want to do. So with you, it's all about waiting for that middle ground, like where that wave bottoms out. And it's all about understanding the length of your waves, because for some people, it might be a few hours, it might be a few days, a week. And just like tuning in and finding out when your middle ground is, where you can make a decision from a place of clarity rather than being in the thick of it and, you know, just agreeing to something because you're really in the emotion of it. And then when you're in your own energy and like that wave bottoms out, you really realize where you are with it, whether it's a yes or a no. And I'm sure we can all think of a time where we've been in a bit of a spin about something. There's a lot of emotional charge and it's, really hard to tap into clarity and what's right to do in that moment. You don't need to have emotional authority to be able to connect with that. But that's definitely more important for you if you have emotional authority, just tuning in with your waves and waiting for that middle ground. And there's actually kind of four subtypes of emotional waves, which is like a more detailed level, but from a headline perspective, that's what the emotional wave is. So the second type is called sacral authority, and this is connected with our gut. So that gut feeling in your lower belly, which is really like visceral, and it's telling you something, that something isn't right, or you feel really excited about something, whatever the emotion might be. And it's very kind of responsive to things rather than proactive. So something might come along and you get that feeling in the lower belly. And there's a couple of cool tips actually in terms of how to connect with that. So the gut generally it loves like more specific options. So it generally doesn't like open questions or open options. So a kind of basic example is if you ask someone with sacral authority what restaurant they want to go to, they may have trouble choosing. But if you ask them, do you want Thai or Italian, their gut is going to be able to respond to that. They have specific options and they'll probably like, oh, Thai, yes. And they'll get that kind of gut response to it. So like that's a really cool way to kind of experiment with it. Ask someone close to you, oh, can you ask me specific questions? Or questions with a yes, no answer. A great way to tune in with it is kind of getting vocal. So when you feel that gut response, like giving it a voice, like, is it saying, oh, like, is it interested? Is it excited? Or is it going, oh, like that negative kind of response. So getting really vocal can literally tell you what your gut is saying, if that makes sense. So they're just two tips. And if you do have sacral authority and experiment around with that, I'd love to hear how they help you out. The third one is called splenic authority. This is my personal authority, and it's all about the intuition. I think we've all had that experience of that inner knowing. It's like that quiet whisper. You can't rationalize why you've had that feeling, but it's just there, that intuitive knowing. And intuition is very quiet and very quick, where the gut is quite visceral and it will stay there for a while. The intuitive hit can be gone in a flash. So it's really important if you have splenic authority to get quiet. Use tools that help you to really get quiet and tune in. So meditation is a great one, just to like, you know, tune inward and start to hear that inner voice. And then again, start to experiment and lean on it. Maybe not necessarily for the big things, because that takes a lot of trust, doesn't it? But just with the small things, like notice where you get an intuitive hit about certain things and just start to lean into a bit more and exercise that muscle and see, you know, where it leads. If it leads to other opportunities off the back of it, if you lean into it, does it feel good when you do the thing that your intuition led you to? And I'm sure, again, whether you have splenic authority or not, we can all think of a situation where we got that inner knowing and we either didn't listen to it, and then something like, not necessarily negative, but it could be negative, or you just hit some bumps in the road not listening to that intuitive hit, and you think, damn, I really should have listened to that. Or you followed that whisper, that inner voice, and it didn't really, you know, if you sounded it out to someone, it probably didn't make sense. You probably weren't able to rationalize it, but you went with it anyway. And more alignment, more flow, more ease, more opportunities came from it. Then the fourth one is called heart authority, or also known as ego authority. And this is all about attuning to your heart's desires. And it's quite selfish by nature, but that isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think society puts these labels on certain things as good or bad, but being selfish is in your alignment if you have heart authority. So genuinely just tuning into what you feel passionate about, you know, is something really igniting that kind of heart-centered feeling, like lighting you up? Do you want to follow it? And I guess the challenge of heart authority is you can often fall into doing things because of your ego. So doing things because it's a should, because of society's expectations, because you think something might look good. But really the question for you is, but is my heart in it? And whether you can achieve something or not, there's not a question mark around that, because there's a lot of willpower in the heart center. But again, just coming back to, okay, I know I can do it, but is my heart in it? Does that make sense? And then the next one is called self-authority. So this is probably the most difficult to tune into. And then physically on the body, it's like in the chest, the center of the chest, and it's actually quieter than the intuition. And this is all about having a strong sense of direction and that inner knowing again. And it's really connected to your sense of self, sense of purpose, sense of direction. So again, it's quite a selfish authority. And whilst it's hard to detect, it's one of those where once you know, and there's no questioning it. A great tip for those with self-authority is sounding things out to people, not to take their advice. That's absolutely key. You don't generally need people's advice for things, but it's all about sounding it out to help you get clarity. Like vocalizing things helps you understand and get clarity with things, if that makes sense. So I'd say, you know, a great tip is just informing those around you that, you know, you really need to sound things out and just give them a heads up. The sixth authority is mental authority. So this is all about the mind, making decisions with the mind. And this is incredibly rare. You can only have mental authority if you're a projector in human design. So projector is one of the five archetypes. And only 20% of the population are projectors, and then significantly less have mental authority. So it is very rare. These are the people who are truly designed to think things through. They are the geniuses. They're here to share their views, their opinions of things. They're here to observe the world, collect the clues, collect the facts, build like that mental picture. They are designed to be in their heads, and that is what will serve them when it comes to decision making. I guess a potential challenge for them is they generally get drawn into the shoulds as well, still in that overthinking nature. And the shoulds of society, what society expects from them, or what existing facts and opinions say, when really they are innate geniuses. They have their own unique views and perspectives on things. So just learning to trust that is a key tip for people with mental authority. And then the seventh type is very unique. It's no authority at all. You can only have this if you're a reflector in human design, one of the five archetypes, and reflectors are only 1% of the population. They are incredibly rare and an incredibly unique type. I will do another episode at some point about the five different types, but they are really here to make decisions incredibly slowly on 28-day cycles. They're more in tune with the moon. And yeah, obviously you can't make decisions, or it'd be very difficult to make decisions on a 28-day cycle about everything, about the small things in life. So really, this is just about the very big things. But I love this authority because I think the more reflectors step into this, the more they give us permission as well to slow down. Because how much are we always in go, go, go mode and feeling the pressure to make decisions, even when maybe there isn't a decision to be made, or maybe it doesn't have to be made right in the moment? So I think the more reflectors are in more of their own alignment, and they, you know, maybe put boundaries in place. Boundaries are great for them to say, I'll get back to you on that, or I will need 28 days to consider that and get back to you. And I know in a world of go, 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 that sounds quite wild. And I guess it doesn't even have to be 28 days, particularly in the beginning if you're just experimenting with it, but just putting that like longer time frame on it. I think the more they step into that, the more they help us as well, and to slow things down for us and help us get into more alignment with our decision-making authority and just life in general. So that's a quick summary of the seven decision-making authorities in human design. I hope you found that really interesting. I did. When I first heard about it, I wanted to learn more. I wanted to find out my authority. And then the next step was like experimenting with it. And yeah, it's really interesting. So if you do find out your authority, do reach out and let me know. I'd love to know. And definitely let me know if you experiment with it as well. If anyone would love a one-on-one session with me, really diving into your human design, my bookings are open right now, which is really exciting. I'll put the link in the show notes for you to go straight through and book. And basically, this is 90 minutes of us diving into your unique human design blueprint. So we get into your gifts, your strengths, how you're designed to engage with the world, how you're designed to make decisions, your purpose, all the things. It's just an amazing tool to really understand ourselves even more. And that obviously then helps us in terms of our work, our life, our relationships. So yeah, I love nothing more than those one-on-one deep dives with people. So yeah, do feel free to reach out if that is speaking to you. Otherwise, thank you so much for listening. I really, really appreciate you being here as always. And I will see you on the next one.